If you only had 24 hours to live and you had to teach your son or sons everything you learned about being a man, from life to love, money to marriage, people to porn, and everything in between, what lessons would you teach him? Well, when my son was only 12 years old, I wrote a book for him I wanted to leave behind as my legacy. It's called Are You the Man? 201 Lessons I Wish My Dad Would Have Taught Me. And I squeezed all of those lessons on manhood into just 124 pages. The lessons I share in this book not only come from my successes in life, but many of them also come from my painful and even shameful failures, including divorce, abuse, addiction, adultery, and abandonment, just to name a few. You can read and learn in less than 2 hours what it took me over 30 plus years to learn the hard way. So just go over to areyoutheman.com and get your copy today. That's areyoutheman.com. Trust me, your wife and children will thank you for it later. In my book, Are You the Man? 201 Lessons I Wish My Dad Would Have Taught Me, on page 81 I write, live your life in such a way that your children can't wait to personally meet and know for themselves the God their daddy loves and serves. Now, if anyone should know how true this statement is, then it's this week's guest, Kurt Dykstra. Kurt is the president of Trinity Christian College in Chicago, Illinois, because he knows that 90% of high school students abandon their faith after they attend college. Listen as he shares insights on how we as fathers can help our children not depart from the way and stay on the path of the Lord. Real Men Connect is next.
Welcome to Real Men Connect. Are you ready to be the extraordinary man, husband, father, and leader God called and created you to be? Then get ready to receive wisdom and guidance from some of the country's most respected men of faith as you learn everything you need to know to go from good man to great man, God's way. No judgment, no shame. Just real men with real challenges seeking real change. All for God's glory.
Hello, mighty men of God, and welcome to the Real Men Connect podcast, where we help good men become great men God's way. I'm your host, Dr. Joe Martin, and every week we interview some of the nation's most respected and accomplished men of faith to find out what it really takes to become the kind of husband, father, and spiritual leader God called and created us to be. And each interview session is packed with practical, proven biblical principles you can immediately apply in your relationships, on your job, and in your community. And today we have with us President Kurt Dykstra, who is the 8th president of Trinity Christian College in Chicago, Illinois, the Windy City. And previously he served as mayor of the city of Holland, Michigan, where one of my dear friends was born and raised, and she loves living in Holland. Can't wait to hear a little bit about Holland, Michigan. And also, he served as the senior vice president and community president of Mercantile Bank of Michigan. And Dykstra also was a part-time member of the faculty at Hope College for more than a decade, teaching upper-level courses in the Department of Economics and Business and the Department of Political Science. And Dykstra and his wife, Leah, they have two daughters, Emma and Juliana. And I'm excited about having President Dykstra on the show today, because as some of you guys may know, if you've been listening to our podcast for a while, that my background is in education before I came into full-time men's ministry about 5 years ago. I spent over about 22 years in education, including over 7 years as a university professor. And I still travel to lecture on college campuses across this country. So you can say that education is still my first love, even though I'm in men's ministry right now. But we invited President Dykstra to be on the Real Men Connect podcast today to talk to us about helping students fight for their faith. And I can't wait to hear what he has to share with us. So with that being said, please help me on welcome Kurt Dykstra to the Real Men Connect podcast. Welcome to the show, Kurt.
Hey, Joe. Thank you so much. Dr. Martin, we should say. We'll say that instead.
If I'm not calling you President Dykstra, you're not going to call me Dr. Martin. Right. You're going to call me Joe, and I'm going to call
Fair
you
enough.
Kurt.
Fair enough. Right. Perfect.
And Kurt, I can't wait to talk to you about this because of my experience in education and some of the challenges I face working on a secular campus. And now that I've spoken on Christian college campuses as well, I can't wait to hear your take on it from an administrative standpoint as well as from a faculty standpoint. And some of the things you're going to be able to share with us as dads who are getting ready to be empty nesters or sending our kids off to college. We talked before we came on the air. You have a daughter who's a senior in high school and one who graduated from college. I have a daughter who's a senior in high school and one who's getting ready to graduate and a son getting ready to graduate from college. So this is going to be a great discussion. But Kurt, before we get started, I always ask our guests to share their favorite Bible verse with us that gives them inspiration from the Word of God. And if you don't mind, what is yours in this season in your life? Or maybe it could be a life verse that you have. Yeah. And tell us why that's your particular verse.
You know, in this season, I've really gravitated to Romans 12:12. Be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer. It's a simple, like a back of a business card kind of verse that you can always remember, always think of. In part because hope is not our natural position, I don't think. We tend to look at least I do, at the things that need yet to get done and the things that maybe aren't quite right. But yet, Paul starts out with joyfulness and hope, but doesn't forget about the fact that there's going to be affliction. He understood it. We understand it. And then throughout everything, you bathe it in prayer. So be faithful in prayer. That's the one that the verse that I've really been thinking about and really working with a lot in the last few months, actually. Since shortly before the first of the year, it just has really spoken to me.
Oh, that is awesome. You know, as I was going through your introduction and it mentioned that you served as mayor of the city of Holland, Michigan, which I'm actually familiar with because one of my dear friends, she lived there. As a matter of fact, I think Anne may still live in Holland, and she actually worked at Hope College. So I'm assuming education wasn't probably your first career. Then was it in politics?
Law, actually. So I'm a lawyer by training. So I practiced law for about 20 years. I started out after graduating from law school clerking at a state Supreme Court for one of the justices, and then practiced in two big firms, one in Milwaukee, one in West Michigan, for the next 20 or so years. So kind of mainly courtroom kind of law. Then along with that, got into some teaching and got into some local politics and then moved into banking.
All right. Because that's a good segue, because what I wanted to start before we get into the topic itself, I wanted to find out a little bit about your journey. You had told me before we came on air that you've been listening to a couple of the podcasts, so you know how we do. And even though we get into our topics, we also want to get into the man himself. So if you don't mind giving us some highlights and taking us back to where it started with you and how you were led into now where you are right now working in education as the president of a Christian college. Take us to the beginning.
You bet. So I was born and raised in southeastern Wisconsin, sort of midway between Green Bay and Milwaukee. So you can kind of guess where my sports allegiances lie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I was the first in my family to graduate from college. So I grew up in a really loving kind of Lake Wobegon sort of community, about 1,200 people. Family, you know, there are really two big principles in that organized my hometown. One was the local high school, and the other were the local churches. So that was kind of the space in which I grew up into a great family. Went off to college in Iowa, ended up meeting my wife there, which was, of course, a really, really big deal. We married in 93. She thought actually she was going to be marrying a pastor. But about 6 months after we got married, we were visiting the seminary that I thought I was going to go to and just sort of realized that was not feeling right. That wasn't really where I was being led. So she was quite gracious and said, well, all right, what are you going to do instead? And I said, that is a great question, honey. Maybe I'll go to law school. So anyway, long story short, ended up becoming a lawyer, practicing law for about 20 years, as I mentioned earlier, doing principally litigation work. So kind of the contentious courtroom sorts of things. And in the midst of that, kind of realized that I had a love for politics, enjoyed education, so got the chance to do some teaching along the way. In that time, we moved to West Michigan. We had a couple of daughters, about 3.5 years apart from each other. They're great kids who, you know, act as sisters do. They love each other dearly and fight like cats and dogs at times.
Yeah.
And then we were really settled in Michigan, and life was good, and got a phone call from a search firm saying that Trinity's presidency was open. My name had come up, and so would I explore it? So I thought, sure, I'm sure they'll take one look at my resume and said, boy, he is a really interesting guy, and boy, we are really not interested. but they kept looking, and I kept looking, and so 5 years ago or so, ended up coming to Trinity, and it's been a really good 5 years. There's a lot of work to do in higher ed that we'll talk about, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
But it's important, it's an important field. It's important for our kids. It's important for our country.
And well, Kurt, you know, I love digging into the childhood and the upbringing of our men, because I think because not every man can relate to you being a president of a college. Most of us will never get to a position like that, but all of us can relate to how we were raised and what we were exposed to and the impact it had on our lives. And just based on what you shared with us, and you did a great job of covering some of the highlights. And you mentioned that you said Leah, your wife, thought she was going to be marrying a pastor. Now, did she want to marry a pastor, or she just knew that's what you were pursuing?
She wasn't opposed to it. Let's put it that way. So her dad is he's still alive, but he's retired now, pastor for about 40 years. So she knew kind of that world and knew what she was getting into. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes you hear PK kid, you know, preacher's kids have really negative experiences about being a pastor's kid. Right. That was not her experience at all. Her dad had a series of really good, successful churches where they loved him dearly. I mean, he's the kind of guy who, you know, got up early to go pray with the people before surgeries, and then he would go to the local high school choir game or football or choir concert or football game. He'd teach the Sunday school classes. He'd preach a couple times on Sunday. He'd teach the midweek classes. You know, marry the young, bury the old. Just a really fantastic pastor, and his congregations loved him. And that was the environment she grew up in. So when when I was thinking pastor, that wasn't something that scared her away, and she thought it was a decent sort of thing.
But I wonder now, though, but after that happened, so obviously she wasn't intimidated that you were going to be, pursue the pastoral role. But when you go from I want to be a pastor to a lawyer, how did her parents respond to that?
Well, I'll give you the best reaction. So my grandmother, who is now passed on, her father was a minister. My grandmother, so my great grandfather. And she said, when she heard I was going to not be a pastor and become a lawyer, and said, she sort of held her hand up high. I know our viewers or listeners can't see this, held her hand up high and said, "You were going to be a minister." And then she dropped her hands low and with a scowl said, "And now you're going to be a lawyer."
Now you're going to be a lawyer.
Right.
Oh, well. Wow. I tell you now, but I got to say this too. Obviously Leah came from a great family. You know, she obviously had great stock with her dad, upbringing, mm-hmm. everything. And you had a desire to go to become a pastor. So that tells me a little bit about your family, give us a little bit more about your dad. And yep. I'm always focused on the dad, the kind of impact the dad had, but I'm sure you had a great mom too. But could you tell us a little bit about your family?
Yeah. So my folks have been married now for 50 years. They met one another in high school, got married right out of high school, had me about 16 months later. So my mom is 20 years older than I am. My dad, 21 years older than I am. So I mean, they were young kind of parents at that time. My grandfather on my dad's side is actually still alive at 96.
Wow.
So it's really neat. So we've had this, I have great memories as a kid of going to grandpa and grandma's house and, being with the extended family. And I don't remember there ever being drama or tension. My dad was a guy who worked hard, worked in some factory jobs, worked, customer service kinds of things, was really active in town, was president of the local school board. So from the earliest age, I have these memories of, of dad being involved in the community and being involved in church and being very present at home. The kind of town that I grew up in is, quintessentially American. Sports are a big deal. High school sports are a big deal. So a lot of our life revolved around going to high school basketball games or football games, doing things midweek at church. Dad would teach Sunday school, teach the catechism classes. We'd go at least once on Sunday, if not twice. Our particular kind of denominational tradition had morning and evening services. So more times than not, we'd be at both of them on a Sunday. It wasn't a perfect household by any stretch, but, it really, really solid, strong family. And there were four of us. I have one younger sister. So it was the four of us growing up and in a really good environment.
I was going to ask you how many kids were in the household. You said it was four. And I know there's men out there who are listening. My childhood could not be more opposite from what you grew up. And I know there are men out there, Kurt, who are listening thinking, wow, gotta be nice. He said it wasn't perfect, but it sound close to it. But I think this is interesting, an interesting perspective, at least what I've been communicated, somebody's communicated to me, and I've looked at my own son through the same lens, is that when people see the kind of environment I grew up in a very traumatic environment, in the hood, teenage mother, dad not there in the home, that kind of thing. And they say, wow, Joe had it rough. And to see me survive that, they look at, wow, God is really, look at God's grace and his mercy. But no one looks at it this way. He actually showed more grace and mercy to you than he did to me because he spared you from having to go through all the stuff that I had to go through as a child. And no one looks at it that way. If anything, because I remember I used to get jealous of people who grew up like that, like you. Yeah. And then, but I'm thinking, no, now I see that my son has been spared all of that trauma. Now I see God's grace.
And I got to say it, and Kurt, you're going to get mad at me when I tell you this. My son told me one day, he says, Dad, he says, I wish I would have grew up like you. I said, why? What? He said, I know you grew up hard and it was tough and everything. He said, but Dad, I tell you, he says, but look at how motivated you are. And I said, if I grew up like that, look how more motivated I'd be. He said, you know, you understand what I'm saying? I said, Kendall, that's stupid.
right. Yeah, exactly.
I said, dude, I would give anything to grow up the way you grew up. I said, anything. Exactly. So to me, it shows God's divine hand on your life, Kurt. And I'm hoping the men out there not thinking, well, if I would have had, no, God knew what he was doing with each and every one of us. And he knew what he had to do to prepare us for the journey. And it now excites me to hear people who had that kind of environment, mm-hmm. who grew up like that. So telling me that there's something that he has for each and every one of us.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great way to look at it. And I guess, frankly, I never thought about it that way. But, you know, clearly all of us at this point in our lives, a lot of it has to do with the places we've come from, the challenges we've overcome, and the experiences that help shape us. That's and, right. you know, candidly, the work that you do and the experiences you've had allow you to do the kind of ministry that you do and that, frankly, only you can do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, your listeners listen in, and a lot of them can relate to, you know, your experiences and your story, and maybe some of them can relate to my experiences and my story. But if it's just you talking to the wall or just me talking to the wall, we're missing, you know, a good segment of the audience because, each of us has our own story and journey. And for both of us, these are journeys of deep faith and great commitment.
Absolutely. And it just shows you how powerful and how great God is that he can take us from totally two different places and lead us to the same place where we're honoring him and worshiping him and edifying him in the work that we do, which is amazing. So, you know, Kurt, let's jump into it, man. As a college president, because we're going to talk about I very rarely do I get to talk to people in education anymore. So I get excited and I get kind of giddy when I get to talk about education. But as a college professor, what concerns you most now about the current climate when it comes to higher education, whether it be on a Christian or even a secular college campus? From your perspective now in your years and now, especially now, I guess, being a lawyer and politician and now doing this, what concerns you the most as a man, as an administrator?
Yeah, I mean, I'll sort of give two separate answers to that. One is sort of the pragmatic, practical side. Mm-hmm. You know, we've overbuilt the system. There are just frankly, for the demand that is out there, there are just frankly too many colleges. And, you read the stories of schools struggling just because there simply aren't the numbers of students that maybe were present a decade ago. So that's kind of a real practical side. I'm a big believer that in order for an institution like us at Trinity to really thrive, we have to operate at that great intersection of mission and margin. We can't just focus on mission and we can't just focus on margin. We have to be in a spot where what we do honors who we're supposed to be and honors our mission. And for us, it's a deeply Christian mission. But we also, at the end of the day, need to make sure that we've got sufficient revenue to pay the bills and keep the lights on. Because if we can't do that, then it's impossible to do our mission. So there's that practical aspect. But I think the other piece to me, which ultimately I think is more important, is just this moment of great upheaval. I don't quite know what to make of it yet. And I'm a firm believer that sometimes people get fairly present-itis. Things have never been as bad as they've been right now.
Right.
Oh, really? Ask Abraham Lincoln about that.
Exactly.
I'm guessing you could go throughout various points, to talk to FDR in about December 10 of, 1941. I things can get a whole lot worse than what they are right now. But at the same time, I see some things that cause me some worry and some concern. The state of how we get along or don't get along, the state of how we agree and disagree with one another. I'm a big believer that we have to be able to talk and to argue in the best sense of the word. I've learned a lot from people who I don't agree with and maybe never come to agreement, but I learn more about what I believe. I learn more about what they believe. And I just think it's a better way to go through life, understanding where people come from and how they get at their own worldviews. So the fact that we're having difficulty doing that and the fact, frankly, that matters of faith are front and center of so many of these kinds of challenging situations we find ourselves in. These are things that cause me great concern. You might think that at a school like ours, a Christian liberal arts college, you might think that we're immune from this, and it's just not the case. I mean, we're a small institution in a big city, in a very pluralistic area, and in a very frankly pluralistic nation. So it would be naive for us to think that on our 55-acre campus, none of that finds its way toward us. In fact, it does. We try to come at these issues from a very different sort of perspective. We come at these issues from a holistically Christian worldview. But at the same time, our students are watching the same television shows as students at, at some state university. Our students mm-hmm. are reading the same newspaper and the same blog posts, and they're following the same political candidates as students at other places. So we're surely not immune from it, though we're trying to help our students navigate them in distinctly and intentionally Christian ways.
I mentioned to you, Kurt, about how before we came on, I used to teach at a historically black college at Florida A&M University in Tallahassee. And I've also taught at a predominantly white college as well. The state of historically black colleges right now, they're trying to do whatever they can to sustain them. Mm-hmm. Some people, we won't even get into debate about that. Some people think that there's no need for historically black colleges anymore. And then you got the people on our side who are people of color thinking, no, this is necessary. But they're struggling to stay afloat. What's the state of Christian colleges in our in our country now? And are they stable? Are they on the decline, the incline? What's going on?
Yeah, here's what's going on. So the most colleges, not all, but most colleges, try to educate that kind of 18 to 22 year old traditional college student demographic.
Right.
Well, that population peaked numerically in about 2011. And it's been on a slow and steady decline numerically since then. And in about 2025, it just drops off a cliff. And if you go back 18 years from 2025, it's right around the time of the Great Recession. So people just weren't having as many children. So that has caused an overall demographic challenge. It's more regional. So, you're in the Southeast and surely in Florida. There are people moving to Florida, and quite frankly, most of the people who are moving to places like Florida are coming from New England and from the Midwest. So we in the Midwest and Chicago face even more acute sort of population changes, and that's colleges and universities across the board. That's state institution, that's private institutions that are not religiously affiliated, and that's Christian colleges. I would say as a sector, and there's outliers, both good and bad, but as a sector, Christian colleges tend to be not nearly as well endowed in the sense of they don't have as large of endowments, frankly, like a lot of the HBCUs. We don't have big endowments, and so these pressures actually maybe cause us even more challenge. And, think about a stormy sea. The smaller boats are the ones that are going to take on water first.
Right.
And a lot of Christian colleges would be considered smaller boats. So there's that aspect, kind of the demographic change. And then, frankly, there is this thing that we were touching on earlier, this sort of change in the culture that, I'm sure we'll get to the sort of what's the status of faith among youth these days.
Right.
And that impacts us as well. Now, I don't want to paint a picture that it's all doom and gloom. In fact, mm-hmm. for us this year, in the year-over-year metrics that we look at, things like applications, things like, students who deposit, we're running anywhere from 30 to 50% above where we were last year. But that's a pretty remarkable story and one that not a lot of my peer institutions are being able to share at this moment.
Right, right. Because I know that has to be a concern a lot of times when you have a quote, I hate to use the word niche schools.
Right.
But HBCUs, the Christian colleges, and even the private institutions, they are considered niche schools and people are going there for specific reasons. And you just mentioned too, we're going to get into that right now. And I've heard so many different statistics and numbers. I typically look at the Christian studies, like Barna does a lot of stuff doing Christian studies about the state of our faith and Christianity in America. And we hear that it's as high as about 90% of Christian kids will walk away from their faith after they graduate from high school and they go to college. Why do you think that's the case from your perspective? And what do you think we can do to turn that around?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you're right. There is a lot of research out there. And, I was just looking at a couple of studies again in the last couple of days. And really, I think it's two things that are happening. One is we have to take it seriously, but on the other hand, we also have to have a longer term perspective. So, for instance, there historically has been a dip in things like church attendance.
Right.
When someone leaves their parents' home and is in that kind of age of their 20s. That's happening now. That happened 20 years ago. That happened 40 years ago. That happened 60 years ago. So that isn't necessarily anything new. I think what has a lot of people alarmed, you hear about the rise of the nuns, not you know, the Catholic nuns, but N-O-N-E-S, those who claim no religious affiliation. Right. And are we becoming more, is the population becoming less religiously oriented Christian, or are we becoming more secular? What is the best data I've seen shows that what's happening is kind of the cultural Christianity stuff is just fading away. It's burning up. It's just not there anymore. So, you know, you and I think are about the same age. So when we were kids, if people were polled, you know, are you a Christian or what, you know, what denomination are you? We might say, you know, I'm Presbyterian or yes, I'm a Christian. And that might have meant for many of us that I maybe went to church once or twice a year. Today, those same kinds of people who are getting asked those questions just simply say, no, I'm not a Christian. So what you see is the indicators of, you know, the markers that you will, that these researchers look at for indications of serious faith, things like how often do you pray? How often do you go to church? For those who are much more regular and more serious about it, those percentages have actually stayed the same. What has dissipated is sort of those cultural Christians where a generation, two, four, six ago, there'd be a consequence for not claiming Christianity. Mm-hmm. Today, there really isn't much of a consequence for not claiming Christianity. So, you know, for us here at Trinity, what we want to see is, you know, overall, I think the culture is becoming more secular, surely, than what it has in the last 25 or 50 years. So what we want to be able to do is help our students, you know, some of whom, many of whom come from you know, solid and deep religious and Christian backgrounds, but frankly, some of whom come from very modest Christian backgrounds and don't know a whole lot about what Christianity means. We want to touch their hearts and their heads so that they know what it is that the faith is about and that they claim it and love it as their faith. And one of the indicators for us that I always like to look at is, you know, so we have a really great theology program here. And all of our students have to take certain required courses in basic theology, basic Christianity. And we find that the numbers of students who come into our school who are either going to be theology majors or minors is actually much, much smaller than the number of students who leave the school with it. And that's because they encounter winsome faculty who are really smart, who really care deeply about the faith and are you know, wise in it, but at the same time are loving and teaching their students what it means to truly be a Christian and what that actually means both for head and for heart. And for many of our students, it's you know, kind of one of the first times that they really get engaged deeply with their faith. So that to me is a good part of what we're trying to do. Is to help our students really understand what it means to be a Christian and to use every part of their body in worship of God.
You know, and thanks for explaining that and sharing that. Guys, we're listening to President Kirk Dykstra, who is the president of Trinity Christian College. And he's talking to us about our kids, about our college-age kids or high school-age kids who are getting ready to go to college and about their faith. And we're talking about this shift in when kids are leaving the faith. And I know, Kurt, you've been, you know, you're on a Christian campus. But I want you to speak for a second talk to us as dads. What can we do as dads to better prepare our kids before we send them off? And before we get to a Christian college, to a secular college.
Sure, sure.
You know, what can we do to, because, you know, you have two kids, even both of those kids, one graduated, Juliana graduated from a Christian college, and we don't know where Emma's going to go yet, but yeah, she's considering it.
Right.
But based on what you know, talk to us as dads, what can we do to better prepare our kids before they go off to a secular school if we're concerned about their faith?
You know, some of it is, I would say, you know, be regular in the blocking and tackling stuff. You know, I used to be heart. Now you can't see me on the podcast, but Joe can. I mean, I'm I used to be an offensive lineman in high school, so a small school.
You don't even look that big. You were
exactly
offensive.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. 166-pound right guard. But I'll tell you, if they needed yardage, they went to the right side. We understood leverage. Anyway, so a lot of it is, I think, the blocking and tackling stuff. Be regular in your kids' lives, sons or daughters, with praying with them, loving your wife, taking them to church, and not just dropping them off, but actually showing up yourself, prioritizing matters of faith. You know, we live, all of us, and our family surely is not immune to this. Things can intrude pretty easily onto Sundays, volleyball tournaments and hockey this and, speech that. And you can find lots of things that'll take over a Sunday if you let it. And we haven't, completely blocked it out historically, but we have prioritized Sunday being a day where we are in worship regularly and where we're together as a family regularly. So a lot of it is, I think, that blocking and tackling stuff where you're building serious relationships with your children. And I know for some of us, that's maybe a longer term thing that we've been able to do since they were babies. And for others, we're in a different sort of situation. But whatever time we have with our kids, we have to love on them and be present for them to the best way we can, and to model for them the things that really matter in life. Relationships with family, relationships with spouses, and relationships with God, especially as it manifests itself through being in church. That's one thing for sure. Mm-hmm. I also think that helps open up the opportunity for adult relationships between fathers and sons and daughters. I mean, one of the great joys is to now have these two adult daughters, a 22-year-old and an 18-year-old. And the 18-year-old, she's technically legally an adult, and there are times when you're thinking, what in the world? But there are also times when, you just say, she is such a great kid, and I like hanging out with her and being with her. But that kind of relationship doesn't happen overnight. Right. And it's not easy. There are moments where, she was really mad at me growing up, and moments, frankly, where I was really mad at her. But you give the opportunity through the good and the bad to develop that deep relationship, which then allows them the opportunity to ask the questions, to not be afraid to send that text that's fairly vulnerable. I think if a parent is sending their kid off to a state school or a secular institution, it's legitimate and reasonable to think, what are they stepping into, and who's going to be there speaking into them? Mm. So if we have the relationships and now we have the technology, I mean, when I was in college, for goodness sake, we didn't talk till the weekends or after 11 o'clock at night when the phone rates went down.
Right.
Now, I mean, I'm getting text messages and snaps and phone calls from my kids, multiple times a day, but the relationship has to be there so that the technology is used for good. Purposes with fathers, sons, and daughters.
And so what I'm hearing that you're saying, Kurt, is that focus on building that foundation, focus on strengthening that relationship, because beyond that, you got to trust God. Yep. But we got to do our work initially in the beginning. We're talking about when they're going off to a secular college. And I know there's a lot of people who believe, okay, if my kid goes to a Christian college, I don't have anything to worry about, which, being a college professor, yes, you do.
You got it. That's right.
But I want you to speak to that dad out there who's thinking, okay, if I just get my kid going to a community, a Christian college, they'll be fine. What should he be doing to prepare his child before they go to a Christian college? Yeah.
A lot of the same things. The one thing I would also say, and this is where it really becomes easier, I think, at a Christian college. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, wherever when you're making the decision with your children about where they're going to go to school, whether it's State U, whether it's Trinity in Chicago, you're going to want to, I think, also speak into that and get to know the place and some of its people. So if you're dropping your kid off at State University, you're going to want to connect with and understand, okay, is there a local intervarsity chapter? Is there a strong local church that cares deeply about the university students, and try and make those connections. Now, when I say that, you do that at a place like Trinity, it's easier. Well, it's because institutionally, that's how we're hardwired. you know, you can call everybody from the dean of students to one of the guys in the maintenance crew to the president's office, and you know that you're working with, talking with, interacting with somebody who shares the same Christian faith.
Right.
But yeah, it's so a lot of the buildup, if you will, the relational building, the foundation stuff, as you talked about, becomes the same. And a lot of the connecting with the institution or the support structures around the institution are the same. For a Christian college, it's easier to connect, and there are more access points because you know that who you're talking with at the college, whether it be a professor or a resident assistant, is going to be sharing those same that same faith, and that makes a big difference. Mm-hmm. And it makes a big difference in outcome too. So, I mean, again, some of the studies demonstrate that Christian colleges, for students who question faith or diminish church attendance in their early 20s, that whole process is a whole lot diminished, or I should say the students who say walk away from faith or question faith, if they're at a Christian college, it's so much less than what you would find at a secular institution. So, you know, in some ways we're actually, you know, producing and practicing what we say we are about. So we're practicing what we preach in many ways.
Now, I was wondering how the numbers differ with that walking away from the faith thing as far as if they're going to Christian colleges. And I wonder, and I guess it's hard to even quantify, do you think that when students do go off to Christian colleges that their faith gets deepened? Or is there any numbers to show that their faith is getting stronger, or is it staying the same? Or they're like, wow, you know, I don't know. What do you see any difference? Is there any data that shows where their faith level is based on attending a Christian college after they go?
Yeah, it's, there is some, so for instance, one study, and I can't exactly tell you which one it is right at the moment, but students who go to a Christian college who report having no Christian affiliation, essentially they walk mm-hmm. away from their faith, is about four times less than what you'd find at either a private non-Christian institution wow. or a state school. So for wow. instance, the difference is between, 2% versus 8% of students who walk away from their faith, the 2% mm-hmm. being the Christian college student. If, 73% of Christian college students continue to pray, regularly, only 56%, pray daily who go to non-Christian colleges once
wow.
they're done.
Wow.
So there's a pretty dramatic statistical difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what we will do, we'll kind of do these longitudinal studies of some of our students. You know, they come in and we try to get a good baseline measurement of where they're at in their faith. You know, how serious are they? How much do they know about it? How important is it to them? And again, with a school named Trinity and a school named Trinity Christian College, you might think that, everybody's totally on fire with their faith. But the reality is, we have students who come from long lines of deeply faithful people, and they've owned that faith for themselves. And we have students, frankly, who know very, very little about Christianity, mm-hmm. but they're here for other reasons. They get to play baseball, or they like the atmosphere on campus, or, it's in the right part of the country. But what we also find is, and one of the real joys of this job, quite frankly, is that I can point to, I could give you 10 different students off the top of my head, and if we were here for much longer, I could just start writing pages and pages of names of students who I know when they came in weren't really sure about what faith looked like or felt like. They maybe have been one of those Creaster families. We show up on Christmas and Easter at best. Mm-hmm. But boy, when they leave this place, they are people who are on fire for the Lord. And they are taking that with them into the communities that they go to, into the workplaces that they go to. And that would not have happened. I guess, well, God can do anything. But we think that we had a pretty important role in helping to nurture that faith, develop that faith, and see that person really come alive in Jesus.
You know, Kerry, what I've noticed from, because I still lecture on a lot of college campuses, and I always get excited and giddy when I get to a Christian campus, because I'm more free, obviously, to talk about my faith. I got to be walk a fine line, and we're going to get to that in a minute. But I got to deal with those challenges as a speaker, as a guest lecturer on campus to do that. But I get to just take the gloves off when I get to a Christian college. But I got to tell you, but when I get to these Christian colleges, and I want the men out there to hear this, I'm surprised because they deal with the same kind of issues that they deal with on secular campuses. Yep. And what I noticed, at least from being just an objective observer going on campus, is that they have more support for their faith on a Christian campus than they would on a secular campus. But the issues are still the same. They still got to deal with all the other stuff that even some of the non-Christian colleges have to deal with when it comes to sex, when it comes to drugs, alcohol, and that kind of thing. We think that is non-existent on Christian campuses, but that's not what I've seen when I've gone there.
Oh, you're exactly right.
But I want to ask you about that along those lines, because there's so many different issues. And we're not talking about that's normal, the alcohol, the stuff we got to deal with on campuses. But the biggest things now seems to be this gender equity and gender issues, so to speak. Yep. It's getting tougher and tougher for Christians dealing with this on college campuses. Why do you think, are you guys experiencing that on Christian campuses too, when it comes to gender difference? Yep. You are going through that? Because I haven't dealt with it. Tell us more about that and how you guys are addressing that issue.
Yeah. So, you know, we see it, probably not to the same extent maybe that a state university right. has, or a completely secular institution has. Hmm. There's a bit of self-selection by students. We're pretty upfront. We're very upfront with who we are as an institution. And, candidly, we're not for everybody. And so we do get some self-selection that happens. But we also see students who, struggle with these issues. And candidly, we're not immune to these things. So one of the things that we do, and you mentioned it earlier, is that we offer a lot of support to students. Student, whether it's counseling services and, faculty who, are there to teach and to train students in the particular disciplines, but also teach at places like Trinity because they want to get involved in the lives of students. They care deeply about students in ways that a place like Trinity helps them live out that they might not be able to at a different kind of institution. So students aren't having to go alone. They aren't having to travel the difficult journeys of whether it's gender and sexuality issues, whether it's anxiety levels, whether it's addictions of all sorts. They aren't having to travel it alone. And the voices that they're able to talk with are people who come at how they approach these things from a deeply biblical Christian faith.
Right.
So they don't have to go alone, and the voices they hear from are people who are trying to steer them back to not just what society says they ought to do or what the popular culture says they ought to do, but really steer them toward a true and abiding biblical faith that sustains them even when the storms are big and the waves are tall.
Yeah, that support is so vital and so critical. I got to tell you, when my son was, he's getting ready to graduate from the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga, and we were looking at some Christian colleges. And I remember when we visited a couple of campuses, I told him quickly, I said, man, I wish I could have gone to a Christian college. Because when I saw just how the support on campus for the faith, I told him, it's the same. I see some of the same issues I see on secular campuses too.
Yeah, absolutely.
I said, but the support you have is just tremendous. But I want you to speak now to, like, your daughter, Emma, she's considering a college. My daughter's getting ready to graduate. I want you to pretend you're talking to Faith. My daughter's name's Faith and Emma. And what would you tell them about how a student can juggle this balance between having this balance between freedom of speech and expressing their religious freedoms on a college campus? How would you tell them how to balance that?
Yeah. So I'm going to put my lawyer hat on for just a second.
Okay.
So part of it depends upon legally, but depends upon, are we talking about a state institution or a private institution?
I want you to do both.
Right. So no. And I guess that's the first, piece of analysis, if you will. So if it's the University of Tennessee or the University of Wisconsin or Illinois or whatever,
right,
it's a state institution. The freedom of speech issues are much more applicable because they're government actors. So there's that aspect. If it's a private institution, whether it's us at Trinity or Vanderbilt or, you name it, Oberlin, we have a bit more opportunity at least to help shape that conversation and, I guess you could say, control that conversation. Now, many schools don't necessarily do that, but because they're private institution, the First Amendment protections are a little bit different. I would say this, especially at a secular institution, a student is going to, I would never discourage a student from standing up for their faith, but I would always encourage that student to know what they're potentially getting themselves into for good or for ill. There can be wonderful moments that come from those bits of controversy. And I would also say it is going to be a difficult road to follow, but an important road to follow. And I will say the student most likely will walk out the other end of that experience with a more clear understanding of what they believe and why they believe it. One of the great principles of the American judicial and jurisprudence system is you have two parties arguing the opposite sides of a case, and through that winnowing by testimony and cross-examination, we hopefully get to the truth. That's the beauty of argumentation. And I think college campuses of any place ought to be places where there is great opportunity for freedom of speech and for viewpoints to be aired, because honestly, I've changed in my 25 years as an adult, 30 years as an adult. I believe things now. I've experienced things now that, you know, the 18-year-old Kurt Dykstra simply would not have known about. Many things in the world have changed. We just think about even technology, right? So it's only, less than 15 years ago that the iPhone came out. I mean, imagine life before that. You know, it's that the world has changed. So I think that, you know, students today, feels like there's a bit more level of advocacy that students have than maybe when you and I were in college a generation ago. But at the same time, I firmly believe that we have to have forums on college campuses where viewpoints can be raised, arguments can be raised, and where there isn't kind of this cancellation culture. That, to me, is the biggest challenge of free speech, is that, you know, there's this sort of feeling that certain people's opinions and viewpoints just have to automatically be shut down because they go against the prevailing orthodoxy. That's a dangerous thing for society, and it's surely a dangerous thing for a college campus.
Guys, we're talking to Kirk Dykstra, who's the president of Trinity Christian College, and he's sharing with us how we can help as fathers and parents to help our kids fight for their faith. As students, to stand up for their faith. And Kurt, we're going to be transitioning soon, but you know, I don't know, we may have time to get into the man-up questions, because I still have some more questions for you. But I want you, because we're starting out about how you said they need to be forms, that they can express, you know, their faith and get to truth, which I do. And that's why I do miss being on a college campus, because they will entertain and let you put forth your message, and people can come out to either disagree or agree with it, and you have the forum to do that. But I want you to give us some practical advice, again, for Emma and for Faith, about what advice would you give to them as students whose faith is being challenged, mocked, or even ridiculed by a professor? Because typically we hear about that happening with, you have an authority figure who's mocking, and now obviously not going to have that at a Christian college. But let's say Emma decides not to go to a Christian college, and that could happen in the classroom. What recourse would you say that they have, and what would you suggest that they do in order to combat that and to stand up for their faith?
Right. So I think part of it, you know, so in some institutions, you know, the lecture hall of 200, it's going to be a pretty tough thing in most instances for that student to really make a stand at that particular moment. Where it might show up is in Faith or Emma's writing and in our assignments, how we answer questions, the worldview that we argue, and we don't you know, diminish argument by coming at it from faith. We don't substitute argument by simply saying faith, but we don't back down from faith because it's not supportable by argument.
Right.
I also think, though, that I would encourage Faith and Emma in that circumstance to find their group, find their posse, find their tribe, find their people, because it can be a lonely, lonely thing in a sea of people who are antagonistic if you're standing alone. You know, I think there's lots of reasons why the disciples were sent out two by two early on. And I'm no theologian, so I know that some of your listeners could probably give us a wonderful sermon on that. But, you know, we're not meant to do the Christian faith alone. So right. I think it would be a very important thing for Emma or for Faith or for your listeners' sons and daughters to make sure that they are banding together with people who share that faith, be it on campus. And surely I would encourage them to find a good church at their home away from home on their college campus. And again, you know, my perspective and my experience is more in the Christian space. But I guess I would just really encourage those students to do those things and to do one other thing, quite frankly, read good biblical material. The challenges we face argumentation-wise on, you know, was Jesus really alive? How can you possibly believe this stuff? Mm-hmm. You know, all the things. I mean, we're not the first in the history of the universe to face those kinds of skeptic questions.
Right.
And there's lots of great material out there. I mean, go back to Augustine, right? I mean, St. Augustine was, you know, he was not exactly a poster child for what we would want our children to be like.
Right.
As a young person, and surely as a young adult. You know, I gave a chapel message a couple of years ago, probably the best title I've ever had, frankly, for one of my messages. It's Abe, Gus, and All of Us. So looking at a section from Genesis on Abraham where he's not at his best, mm-hmm. looking at you know, the story of Augustine, Gus, where, you know, his early life was nothing to really be very proud of, and recognizing that, you know, for all of us, we all hopefully we're continuing to grow more deeply in faith, but that surely does not make us perfect people. So I would just also encourage our kids, and I would frankly give them some things to look at and to read, because the faith, the questions that they face, the challenges they face, are not unique, and it's not the first time they've been around. And standing on the shoulders of those who've gone before, I think, is also a really powerful thing.
You know, Kurt, I want to close this out as we close out this segment and we get into the man up questions. You know, in education, I know there's a lot of dads out there, and my wife included, who are nervous about, you know, our kids going off to college. And, yeah. and if they look at the media and they listen and see what's going on in society, it could be gloom. It seems like it's gloom and doom. Boy, there's no hope. And so I want you, just as we close out this segment, as a career educator, mm-hmm. Based on what you see and what you know, give us something that can encourage us about education today in higher ed.
Let me first sort of echo exactly what you're saying. So we dropped our older daughter, Juliana, off at Trinity, and we literally live two blocks down the street.
Right.
And my wife, Leah, and I were both hot messes as we dropped her off. You know, and we drove two blocks down. So it's real, whether it's, you know, State U, whether it's Trinity Christian College. You know, the reason I do this job, I mean, faculty are wonderful. The staff is great. Institutions are great. I love those things. But seeing really these kids coming in as 18-year-olds, seeing them come in, walking with them, seeing them mature and develop and build new friendships and relationships, discover things about who they're made to be, discover things that give them passion, and then seeing them 4 years later walk across a stage, handing them a diploma, and then watching them go where they go. It is a remarkable 4 years for mm-hmm. these students. They are different people when they leave, and they are young and productive adults. And then we also educate some, you know, older students who return to campus, working adults. We have a graduate program to see the commitment that these people have toward education and to helping better their lives and to better their families' lives is really inspiring. In fact, in our December commencement, we have a lot of our adult students and our graduate students graduate in December. I actually like the December commencement better because it is so celebratory.
Right.
The blood, sweat, and tears that these people have done, the sacrifices they've made, working jobs, raising families, taking time away from other pursuits in order to get more education, and then to see the pure joy they have in seeing that accomplishment. I mean, I'm not sure you could be cynical enough to go to one of those ceremonies and not have your heart melt. It is really, really remarkable. So in the end, I see just the transformation that happens with students as they grow and experience and then have the, you know, the great joy of walking into the world better prepared to handle, yes, their particular career, but also to handle the questions that life is going to throw at them in a way that honors Jesus Christ.
And Kurt, thank you, because I wanted to close out this segment, not getting us scared or nervous about letting our kids go from the nest. I remember when I was a professor, and I always said, man, I don't want to go to all these graduations. You know, we got to sit through the ceremony.
Right.
But I got to tell you, you are absolutely right. But every one of them I went to, I mean, they all felt like special.
Yep.
And no matter how long the ceremonies are, and I taught at a school that was about 12,000 students. Another school is about 10,000 students. So you're talking about huge graduations.
Yep.
But you're right to see the development of these students when you saw them come in as freshmen and when you see them leaving as graduating seniors. It's phenomenal. And to the point that I start encouraging students, I say, I think every person should attend, at least, even if it's not their own children, attend a graduation ceremony.
Yep.
Because the stories and the just the jubilation that you see, it's just awe-inspiring.
Yep.
But we're running out of time, but I'm not going to let you go without taking the man up questions, Kurt. But I got a different spin I'm going to do on it. I'm not telling you what it is yet.
Okay.
But I'm going to do a different spin on the man up questions because I really want to kind of help us as parents to equip our kids for this new chapter in their life when they're going off to college, whether they go to a Christian college or to secular school. So basically, the questions are like this, Kurt. It's just five questions, start with the letters M-A-N-U-P, and all it requires your fearless honesty, which you shouldn't have a problem with. So the questions, are you ready, man?
I am ready.
All right. And guys, we'll be right back with my guest, Kurt Dykstra, who's the president of Trinity Christian College, and he's going to take on the man of questions. We'll be right back after this short break. Are you ready to cheat on your wife? No, I'm not talking about that kind of cheating. I'm talking about gaining an unfair advantage on how to understand your wife better, love her deeper, avoid unnecessary arguments, and even have more sex with her. That's right. Based on the success of our Marriage Secrets for Men boot camps, we're finally sharing the Marriage Cheat Sheet for Men with the public. This is the quick reference, must-have, go-to guide for husbands and wannabe husbands that can help stack the odds in your favor. The Bible tells us to live with our wives in an understanding way. Well, the Marriage Cheat Sheet for Men is your shortcut to doing that. So you'll learn four questions you can ask your wife in every argument to avoid future arguments. You'll learn the 45 questions you can ask her to learn and master her heart. 50 ways to love your wife better. 6 things you can say to her to manage her response before you damage her emotions. 10 things you can do right now that will lead to more sex. 8 ways to get her to stop ignoring you, even 49 ways to have more meaningful conversations with your wife, and much, much more. See, this is the manual every divorced man wishes he had before he got married. Well, at least I did. And I'm so God confident that the Marriage Cheat Sheet will become one of the most valuable referred to resources in your marriage library that if you don't think so, just send it back for a full refund. Trust me, next to our Marriage Secrets for Men bootcamp, this will be the second best investment you will ever make in your marriage. Now, to get your copy of the Marriage Cheat Sheet for Men on sale for a limited time only, just go to realmenconnect.com and click on the store button. That's realmenconnect.com. Welcome back, Mighty Warriors, with my guest, Kurt Dykstra, who's the president of Trinity Christian College. And I told him we're going to put a different spin on the man up questions. And Kurt, what I'm going to do is I'm going to look at it from the standpoint of being a student. Now, I don't, you know, as far as when you were a student, did you go to a Christian college yourself?
I did. Yes, I did.
Okay. Yep. And so we're going to put you back. We're going to look at it from a student standpoint. So they won't be too personal. But let's start with your experience, not only as a student, but also what you've seen now as a professor, as an administrator. What is the biggest mistake do you think students make that you've seen from your perspective that students make when they're going off to college?
They squander the time. I mean, they have, you have amazing opportunities in college to try new things, to explore, to almost reinvent yourself. You're going away from home. You're meeting new people. Nobody knows your past.
Right.
And I think students just make the mistake of really not seizing that opportunity and exploring new things and trying out new opportunities.
Wow. You know, and it's funny, as soon as you said I'm about to jump out of my seat, because I agree with that 100%. Because, you know, and they, you know, when they go off to college, they're thinking, wow, 4 years is a long time. That time is going to go by so fast.
So fast.
And even I look back now at my college experience and I wish now, and I had a great college experience, graduated top of my class, both student of the year, all that stuff. But yet I would still go back and change some stuff, Kurt, because I mean, I wasted this opportunity. I would have done that. I would have done this. And the thing that I regret more, and it's like you just said, I think that's perfect what you said about wasting the time. I'm like, you know what I would have gone back to change? I would have been more intentional about building relationships.
Yeah. Yep.
On campus. I thought it was just get this degree, get out of there, get you a job, move on. And I would have been more intentional about building a relationship with my classmates, with my professors. would have been more intentional. Yep. And I realized that, wow, even though I did well, I wasted so much time on things that really didn't matter.
Yep. And the, and especially if you're a traditional age college student, you have the gift that guys like you and me don't. And that is time.
Right.
And once, and once that time is gone, you can't get it back.
You can't get it back. So, man, that's good. That's why I'm going to keep these questions geared towards that, because I really want to bless a student out there, or at least a parent who can tell their students this. Say, hey, listen to what Kurt said. This guy's the president of a college. He's telling you this. Now, the A stands for attitude. What if you could change one attitude in students?
Mm-hmm.
What would it be? Other than wasting time, what would it be that could help them?
You know, getting back a little bit to what we talked about earlier with kind of this whole free speech argument kind of idea, I would say sort of the humility to listen. Mm-hmm. And shoot, college presidents and professors could use the, you know, could use this same advice, but to listen to others and to think, maybe I don't know all the answers, and maybe someone else comes from a place that they've got something to teach me too.
Right. So
being open to, you know, you're not just a wet sponge. You're not just sort of saying, hey, whichever way the wind's blowing is what I'm believing. But understanding that, you know what, 18-year-old Kurt is different than 50-year-old Kurt in many ways. Some core stuff obviously remains the same, but you just learn. You know, you live and learn. That's why that's where that phrase comes from, right? Live and learn.
Right. You know, I was talking to my son today. I tell you, he's getting ready to graduate from college. And he had mentioned he's now looking at doing interviews and that kind of stuff. And he says, Dad, he said, I had a potential employer tell me, he says, that you're mature for your age, you know, that he sounds real mature. Kendall said, Dad, I don't always see that. I don't always see that this maturity they see in me. And I told him, I said, Kendall, ever since you were a little boy, I said, you've had a curiosity about you, and you were never afraid to ask questions, even the tough ones.
Yep.
And I said, I'm begging you as your dad, never lose that desire to learn and to be teachable. I said, Kendall, he said, Dad, I used to think I was bothering you by asking you so many questions. I said, no, remember, I'm an educator. I said, yep. So we exactly. love students who want to learn. I said, Kendall, don't you ever lose that. So you're right on point when you're talking about that attitude. I told, man, if that is something great to have a teachable spirit and be willing to learn.
Absolutely.
He said, Dad, but you asked me just as many questions. I said, yeah, because I want to learn from you too as well. And so I think that's great advice. Now let's go to the end. Now we can get a little bit off away from the students, but I want to look at you now in your position, because Ralph, you're at the top now at the college being the president. But what would be the next big thing you would do now, because you've been a lawyer, you've been a politician, you're now an educator, administrator. What would be the next big thing you would do for God if you knew you couldn't fail?
Yeah, and I think I'm thinking about this from my current role. I'm passionate about Christian higher ed, and I want to see it survive and thrive. Mm-hmm. And I think what we need to do is find ways to strengthen the overall industry by working with individual schools to consolidate them and to create some hefty research universities that can, you know, throw elbows around with some of the most famous names in higher education. We have a lot of great Christian colleges and university in this country. It's a wonderful sector, but with the demographic changes, with sort of the changes overall to the economics and finances of higher ed, I'd love to see a number of these places come together, join forces, and really become a powerful dominant, and maybe not dominant, but a powerful voice in education in the United States and in cultural change in the United States.
Mm-hmm. You know, Kurt, you say that, but you know what I'm thinking when you say that? I'd love to see that with the church.
Oh, amen. Absolutely. Absolutely. No doubt.
Yeah. And I would love to see that in education as well. But as soon as you said it, I thought, wow, wouldn't that be a great thing if the churches did the same thing, even in local community, if churches combine and, you know, put their brought the resources together, say, hey, you're great at this, you're great at that.
Yep.
Let's share information, let's share resources, and not be so turf guarding,
I wonder what the ratio is between churches that divide and split versus that come together. I bet the ratio is not good.
I know that's right. Now, let's get to the U. The U stands for understand. Understand. What do you think now we're going to take you back to being a student yourself.
Yep.
When you were younger, what was the one thing you didn't understand about being a young college student as a man that you understand better now?
Yeah, I think hopefully, unfortunately, Leah's not on the podcast here. I think I'm quicker to listen now than what I was before. Maybe I'm less sure. of what exactly is right and wrong. So maybe a little more grace-filled than what I might have been, when I was back in college. I still have certain very strong beliefs and act on those. But I also think I'm a better listener and give a little bit more grace and receive a little bit more grace than what I did when I was younger.
You know, I wrote a book, Kurt, called Are You the Man? 21 Lessons I Wish My Dad Would Have Taught Me. And one of the things we mentioned in the book that I mentioned as advice in the book, I said, if you see someone more successful than you are, all it means that they listened sooner and took action faster.
Yep, absolutely.
Just, being quicker to listen.
Yep.
It goes back to what you were saying to your earlier point, too, about being teachable. And that's what listening is. When you're listening, you're learning.
Yep. Exactly. You know,
so that is great. Now, here's the last one. We'll let you off the hook with this one. And the last letter is P, stands for problem. And even as a mighty man of God in a great position of influence that you're in right now, what is the problem? And don't worry about your students at your college are not going to hear this. What's the problem in your life that you still struggle with as a man today?
You know, when you said that, I circled what's the one problem? I circled one and put a question mark.
Just one?
Just one. So I've got a whole list of them, but I'll pick one. And I think this is true for a lot of the men who are going to be listening. It's defining priorities, not letting the urgent displace the important.
Right.
And all of us, whether you're a college president, motivational and national speaker, whether you're a sales guy, whether you're working in a factory, whatever you're doing, it is very easy to have that calendar fill up with stuff and probably not the most important stuff. And you know, we want to get to a spot with our children where we take the time to build those relationships. We want in our work environments, we want to focus on the legacy stuff, the stuff that people will remember, or even if they don't remember, it will change the trajectory of the places that we work because we took the time to make those things, as opposed to letting our calendars fill up with the stuff that just has to get done. So that for me in this job in particular, and in this season in my life where, you know, candidly, I'm at an age now, I remember 20 years ago doesn't seem that long, but then you start doing the math forward in 20 years, that's oof. That'll go by in a heartbeat. And what kind of legacy do I want to leave? And if I want to leave a legacy that is one of impact and faith, then I've got to be focused on the right kinds of things. And to focus on the right things makes me really have to focus on defining the things that really matter and setting those as priorities.
Fantastic. Great job, Kurt. That was awesome. And thank you so much for being so transparent and honest with our listeners. I'm sure that's going to bless a lot of our listeners. And that's why I love doing the Man Up questions, because it's one thing to see where a man is, but when you dig a little bit deeper to find out what he's still going through in the process, know that life is a process. It's not just a destination. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. I really appreciate it, man.
Thank you, Joe. Greatly appreciate it.
And man, guess what? We've reached the end of our show today, believe it or not. But don't you worry. We'll be back to do it again next week with a new guest, new insights, new lessons. So make sure you don't miss it. And I'd like to thank my guest, Kurt Dykstra, for joining us today, for being so gracious with his time. Kurt, thank you so much for doing that. They don't know, even though when this airs, they don't know we're doing this at night. And I tell you, we don't normally do interviews at night. But thank you, man, because you guys can't see Kurt, but he still is in his suit. I think you're still are you in your office?
I'm
still
in my office. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But thank you for making the time to do this interview, man. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Joe, it has been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
And Kurt, quickly for us, if our listeners wanted to find out more about you, your college, or what you're working on, what you're doing, what would be the best way for them to reach out to you and connect?
I'll just give you my personal website because it's got links to everything. So it's Kurt Dykstra, KurtDykstra.com.
All right. And you were one of the fortunate ones to get your name with a .com.
There we go. That's right. I jumped on it earlier.
That is great. So that's KurtDykstra.com. We'll have that also in the show notes. If you guys want to reach out to Kurt, please do that. I'm sure he'll love to hear from you. Absolutely. And guys, also do us do us a quick favor. And it's just do it. Just please go over to iTunes. Take about 30 seconds. Go over to iTunes and rate the program for us. It's the best way to help us get this program in the hands, ears, and hearts of men just like you. Guys, you've made us the number one podcast on iTunes for Christian men. And that means you're sharing us with the world. So keep doing that. Keep sharing us with your friends. We really appreciate it. And if you have some great comments to share about my interview with Kurt Dykstra, please do that as well. And I would love to pass on those to him. So until next time, I'm Joe Martin, your man builder with realmenconnect.com, reminding you that we are males by birth, but we are men by choice. So each and every day, choose to be the man that God has called and created you to be, because a male is a terrible, terrible thing to waste.
So until next time, stay strong, stay blessed, and as always, stay in God's grip.
Thank you for listening to the Real Men Connect podcast with Dr. Joe Martin. Real Men Connect isn't just a podcast. It's a mission, ministry, and movement to help good men become the great men God called and created us to be. And the best is yet to come. So if you enjoyed this episode, go ahead and leave us a review in iTunes. It really helps us to build the podcast and to reach, teach, and impact more men, all for the glory of God. And make sure you check out realmenconnect.com to get our free tools and resources to help you go from good man to great man God's way. Again, that's realmenconnect.com. Thank you for listening. We'll see you in the next episode.